the Horns, a Bitcoin podcast about South Africa. I'm your host, Ricky Allardyce. And today we spoke to King of HODL. King of HODL is a self-described armchair economist. He's South African and he's a Bitcoin maximalist. We spoke all about what's happening in the world today. What's the current state of affairs in terms of the global economic picture? What banks are doing to do with QE? How does this end? You know, where is this going? How do CBDCs tie into money printing, movement passports, vaccine passports, etc.? Like, how does it all come together? And why is Bitcoin so important as a means to undermine what essentially is creeping totalitarianism? Super interesting conversation. We had a few technical difficulties in the chat, internet issues, so do apologize for that. Try to resolve as many as possible, but there might be a little bit of a delay in some of the sections. All right, guys, and then as you know, we do ad reads for companies that we believe in the Bitcoin space in South Africa. No one pays us anything. We just find projects that we really enjoy, and then we show them on the show, basically. So first up, we've got Exonumia. Exonumia is a Bitcoin open source translation project where they are trying to translate seminal Bitcoin works into native African languages, be that English, well, not English, be that Afrikaans, Pedi, Tonga, Venda, Khoza, Zulu, etc. Open source, anyone who wants to contribute can go and contribute. Brilliant projects. Also, they need some sats, so send them some sats so they can pay for translations. Next up, we've got Bitcoin Ekasi. Now, Bitcoin Ekasi is an offshoot from the Surfer Kids, which is an NPO in Mossel Bay. What they're trying to do at Bitcoin Ekasi is emulate the Bitcoin Beach model in the local township in Mossel Bay. So this is a very, very important project. As we know, Bitcoin Beach is what led to the hyper-Bitcoinization of El Salvador. So this is what they're trying to achieve at the grassroots level in Mossel Bay. Super interesting project. If you want to help out, they can need all the skills they can get. So if you've got any hard Bitcoining skills, please get hold of them. Also, if you want to contribute, send some sats, they can really use it. They're trying to orange pull the entire community. Go support the great work they're doing. Then next up, we've got Mystic Turtle, the only place to buy your corporate swag or any custom gear you want to have made. Specifically, you can pay in Bitcoin. They made these rad hoodies for us. Very cool, great people. And like I said, they accept Bitcoin, so hit them up. And then finally, we got Bitvice, which is myself and Brandon's company. We do self-custody only Bitcoin. So you can go and set up a profile, send us a Bitcoin address and link your bank account, and then just pay and we'll send you sats. It's that easy. We don't hold your Bitcoin for you. There's no custodial risk. I think it's a great service, but try it out. See what you think. Yeah, we're busy upgrading and putting a couple of new products in the market at the moment. So yeah, exciting things coming. All right, guys, with that, onto the show. Cheers. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to By the Horns, a Bitcoin podcast about South Africa. And this evening, we are joined by none other than King of HODL. King of HODL is an avid Bitcoiner and an armchair economist. Well, I don't think he's that much of an armchair economist. He knows his stuff. But yeah, we're going to get into what's happening in the world, why you can't taper a Ponzi, and why Bitcoin. King of HODL, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Ricky.
Lekker, man.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah, yeah, I am an armchair economist.
Now, this is the thing about armchair economists, right? Like, people say it like it's a bad thing. But I think being an armchair economist, they typically understand more of what's going on than academic economists sitting in universities do. And how do you feel?
Yeah. You know, I think what we've seen with COVID is that a lot of people can be bought. This also is, you know, very relevant with the economics field. And Keynesians, they have been known to be quite untoward, or rather, I mean, when you look at someone like Steve Keen and the stuff he says, you know, they're not really honest about their field. There's a lot of discussions on areas that are, you know, it's sort of like they put themselves in this environment where a lot of variables are, you know, kept stable so that their theories can play out. So yeah, just my background, I've just been a passionate armchair economist all the way from, you know, school days when I was doing economics in high school. I'd always have questions, you know, and I never found the answers. And I wanted to do economics in uni, did not do that. You know, I continued to learn about the field, continued to sort of undress the failures of Keynesian economics, but starting off from a leftist point of view. And here I am, a Bitcoiner, heading towards libertarian views. Things change, man.
Yeah, you know, I find look, that was my like story as well, right? Like, I came to Bitcoin as a lefty. Obviously, you go to university, you exit university as a lefty. That's kind of how it works. And we wonder why society is going the way it is. But anyway, I digress. But, you know, enter as a lefty, and then you find Bitcoin, and you start paying tax, and you enter the workforce. And then you realize, oh, this like leftism stuff, like, it sounds great, looks good on paper, but like doesn't work. And I think Keynesian economics is the same way, right? Like, these guys sit in their ivory towers and pontificate and come up with complex equations, but it's not reality at all. And it's bearing out that way. Like, these guys couldn't be further detached from reality. Like, they're saying like inflation's a good thing, and then when it turns out to not be a good thing, they say, oh, none of us saw it coming. I mean, what use are they if they can't even see inflation coming?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Milton Friedman that said inflation is always a monetary phenomenon. And then, I mean, to be fair, I mean, if you're sitting on that chair and you're probably like the central banker or, I don't know, the finance minister or treasury secretary, you'll never blame your policies or inflation on your policies. You're going to find a scapegoat. And that's what has happened so far, post-2020, where QE wasn't only a monetary policy phenomenon, where we started seeing fiscal policy being ramped up, like helicopter money, which is something that was, you know, far off the radar for a lot of people. And they just kept on blaming supply chains and, using the infamous transitory term, which was quite funny. I mean, for them to...
It's insulting, just, really.
I mean, for them to pull out in the last minute and say, it's not transitory. I mean, they're just so disingenuous. It's from the top. It has this cascading effect all the way to the bottom, and the professionals involved in the field have to basically regurgitate all this stuff. So, yeah.
And, the craziest thing is, like, there's no error correction mechanism in that field of like broad mainstream economics, like Keynesian economics, because it is a discipline that is subservient to big government. And it always justifies the use of government power. And it's the same with any narrative that you see out there being perpetuated by academia. If it validates the use of power, then that's the idea that will gain mainstream, I wouldn't say adoption, but it'll be pushed by the mainstream media, and because it validates the use of power, and then it validates the use of big government. So then they get funding. It's like this virtuous, well, non-virtuous cycle, really, where Keynesian economists will say, okay, we need to print money because we've got to boost aggregate demand, or, we need to have UBI because it's going to boost aggregate demand. Obviously, that's like academic cover for the government to go and print money, because they're like, yeah, look, our experts are saying we should print money, and that's a good thing. But obviously, it's validating the use of power. Whereas the Austrian school is saying, don't print money. That's what's called a regressive idea. In other words, it invalidates the use of power. And therefore, that idea won't get its time in the sun, because, the powers that be are like, well, we're going to shut that down because that doesn't increase our power. And if you look at it from those two paradigms, like, is this an idea which validates user power, or does it invalidate? So is it progressive or regressive? Well, actually, exactly. Is it dominant or is it regressive? And if it's a dominant idea, in other words, it validates user power, it's going to get its time in the sun. And I'll apply this to climate change. So I used to work I was in academia in the natural sciences, and like in my department, and this is in 2000, and let's say I was doing postgrad in like 2012, 2013. So like if you had to write a research grant proposal and you included the words climate change in there, doesn't matter if you were studying the meth habits of the Cape Franklin, but if you say due to climate change, you'll get funded.
Yeah. You know? Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Any argument you can push that, because climate, if you're writing about climate change, you're like, there's a problem. We need government largesse to solve the problem. And therefore the government's like, oh, yeah, I see our experts here are saying we need to do something about it. And then they keep funding those scientists. And that's kind of how it goes. I mean, that's the same with economics. It's no different. Mm-hmm. And that's why no difference. Economists can't talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be the last people to actually catch it, you know, and learn about it and just go down that rabbit hole. It's going to be too late. It's going to be hyper-Bitcoinization by then, right? Yeah, it's really fascinating to see the incentive structures of these different fields and how narratives are formed. I'm not an expert on climatology, but climate change, the COVID-19 hula baloo has
smells the same.
Very similar distinctive features where it has to follow a particular narrative that is going to benefit a few powerful people. And, you know, Bitcoin fixes this, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the real interesting thing, right? Because, like, this is why trust in institutions is at an all-time low. Because institutions are clearly just tools being used to further the agenda of the powerful and further concentrate power. And if you want to use money as a proxy for power, you just need to look at where the concentration of money has gone to over the last 2 years. It's gone to the top, ten biggest companies on Earth, and the top 50 richest individuals on Earth have just gotten richer. Because any idea coming out of the academies, out of the universities, and out of the press that furthers the use of power is an idea that is favored. And it's gotten to the point now where if you speak out, if you're putting forward a regressive idea, one that, you know, doesn't favor the use of power, not only do they ignore you, fine, but they censor you, which means you're right.
They'll destroy you.
they'll censor you and they'll try to destroy you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good sign. Definitely. You know? But the thing is, for the first time ever, there's a punitive system in place now that punishes people who lie and are disingenuous, specifically when it comes to money, because Bitcoin is based on energy and you can't cheat energy, you know, like
exactly.
You can't, it can be created or destroyed. It can't be created or destroyed. It's just moved in phase. You can't cheat it. And hard money drives out good. So yeah. How do you see this playing out over the long term?
I guess we're going to have to go through, I suppose, a state attack, a coordinated state attack. I think we're seeing it through shitcoins. When you look at the likes of Ethereum and the likes, I'm pretty certain that it's a divide and conquer type of scenario where we are thrown with many projects that claim to create new money, but they're just centralized garbage, and they're just not fixing really important issues with our money, which is the Cantillon effect. You print money, it starts at the top, and then it trickles down, and by the time it trickles down, the inflationary pressure has already wiped up your spending power. So, I mean, when you have tokens like this that are controlled by a few individuals, I mean, it's as good as having the Fed in control of the money supply. So I think we have to go through these nation state attacks, shitcoins being probably the first stage. Second stage being sort of the FUD has been going on. I guess the second stage would be an outright ban on Bitcoin. I'll probably use the 1930s with FDR sort of putting gold as a unwanted commodity, you know, because they wanted to print so much money with the New Deal. And, you know, hard money limits the power of governments through, limited fiscal maneuverability. So, yeah, I think we're just going to have a situation where I don't know how it's going to play out, to be honest. A lot of people are saying that sort of attacking the biggest mining operations, but that doesn't make sense because the difficulty will adjust and everybody can just spin up a computer. And if the difficulty just falls to that level, I mean, I could even turn my laptop on and just start mining Bitcoin. So it's going to be very interesting to see. And I feel like the window of opportunity is declining rapidly. But I mean, you could see it with the remarks of Hillary Clinton all of a sudden saying, cryptocurrencies are, bad for US dollar hegemony. But in honest fact, she's talking about Bitcoin, right? So, yeah, I think it's getting to that point where they want to print a lot of money and there's this hard asset that will just reflect all this money printing. And yeah, the window is getting slim. I mean, they had their chance in 2013 or 14 when the network was still small, but now it's just so large, diverse, strong. You try to ban stuff, it's just going to show up elsewhere, just like the China ban. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting. But one thing that I know is that Bitcoin has already won. It's just a matter of time right now.
You know, my biggest concern with Bitcoin is not Bitcoin. It's my movements as an individual, because you and I live in South Africa, right? So we can look at what's happening here. And incidentally, the expropriation bill just died in Parliament today. So that's what we celebrate. Yeah, that's brilliant news. Concerning that 204 people still voted for it, though. 204 MPs voted for it. How can you be an MP and you want to destroy the country? Anyway, beside the point. But the issue is, the Bitcoin network is there, but now we might have our movement restricted as individuals. Because they can't stop the movement of money anymore. They can only stop the movement of people, because money's gone digital and it's gone global. How would you practically stop the movement of Bitcoin? You would have to go to exchanges and throttle exchanges and say, okay, you can't allow Bitcoin to be withdrawn to privately held addresses anymore. Good luck enforcing that. All of the money will just flock off exchanges. It'll go to P2P markets. Exchanges will be destroyed. You'll have no more tax goose to tax
cut. Just like we saw in Nigeria.
Exactly right. It'll be exactly that. And Nigeria's got the most robust P2P market on earth now, and you've got 30% of the population using Bitcoin. It's fucking great. But the issue is they can issue movement licenses, so they can say, okay, and we're seeing this play out right now. Unvaccinated, you can't move.
You're right. So, now. Exactly. Yeah.
And they're like, okay, cool. Only the compliant class can move, can have their privileges, because what they're doing is divide and conquer. So you corral up all the people that are least compliant, in other words, those who are not getting vaccinated. You get them, you make their life a misery, make them an example. And worst case scenario, in the most extreme situation, let's say it's a despotic regime, you genocide all of them. Then you just left with the compliant people. And then people are pretty scared. But you've got to do that simultaneously all around the world. And that's why I totally agree with what you're saying. The window of opportunity is just closing. Because for these despots to try to pull this off, they have to do it covertly, and then they have to do it all at the same time all around the world. And there's obviously game theory playing out between nation states, because China, Russia, America, India are all looking at each other, being like, who's going to blink first? Who's going to fuck up first? Because they're going to try to, game the advantage. And then you've got El Salvador biting at their heels, like this tiny little country that no one gives a shit about. All of a sudden is issuing volcano bonds, right? Yeah. And they're going giving them the IMF the middle finger. They're like, fuck off. They're trolling them. I mean, Bukele is trolling the Reserve Bank governor, or the UK, the Bank of England, their Reserve Bank. He's trolling him on Twitter. So it's amazing.
It's crazy, right?
Because the governor was like, yeah, I'm really worried about El Salvador buying Bitcoin and Lemonade is like, he's basically saying they're irresponsible. And Bukele trolls him back and he's like really worried about the Bank of England printing all this money out of thin air.
Exactly. I mean, the funny thing was with, the BOE, what they've done is, and they've done it twice now, was they printed money outright, right? So usually with QE, you buy bonds in the secondary market. You know, it's not necessarily termed as debt monetization, but the BOE did this in 2008 in very small quantities and in 2020 again. And I mean, you know, and then they go and shun Bukele, who is literally trying to use the hardest form of money ever known to mankind, you know, to pretty much circumvent the IMF.
Yeah.
and all these Bretton Woods systems, I mean institutions. Yeah. So it is so funny. It's they are getting to that point where they realize that they're losing control and they are going to try and sort of blame Bitcoiners probably at a later stage. Totally. But they're going to make sure that Bukele's vision is not it doesn't see the light of day. But yeah, I mean, what happened with those volcano bonds was very interesting. I mean, I looked into it quite a bit. And they are looking to circumvent the traditional international bond market by issuing out bonds that are backed by Bitcoin. I think it's $1 billion worth, and 500 million is going to go into Bitcoin mining, and the other 500 million will just buy Bitcoin, and the appreciation of the price of Bitcoin is going to pay what is known as these Bitcoin dividends after the 5-year lock-in period. So, yeah.
So let's just dive into that a bit of the mechanics of how this works. So you and I had a chat about it on the group So El Salvador's sovereign bonds are trading at 16% coupon value, right? So in other words, your yield you're getting on a El Salvadorian debt on a 10-year or whatever is like 16%, but the volcano bond is only paying 6.5%. So maybe just explains people the mechanics of how this volcano bond works and what the potential upside is.
Yeah, just to clarify a couple of things, right? So that I don't know what the yield is right now, but that's the yield to maturity. So you're essentially buying these bonds off somebody else in the secondary market. So this is what the Fed would usually do. And what you look at is the coupon rate from the auction of the bonds, which is roughly 7.5 to about 8 for the existing bonds. But historically, it's been around, you know, the high digits just before double digits, high single digits just before the double digits. And these volcano bonds have a 6.5% coupon rate. And
so you were talking, you were talking about the sovereign bonds there first. Those are the high yielding ones, like your 9% ish. That's a sovereign bond, not a volcano bond. Just a normal government debt.
Not a volcano bond, just a normal government debt.
Shitcoin bond.
That shitcoin bond. Yeah. Dollar denominated debt that has a coupon of roughly, I think the lowest I saw was around 7%. So Bukele et al. Here are looking at, I mean, here's what I see and what a lot of people have been saying about the story is that they're looking into crowding out this traditional market by offering Bitcoin bonds at a lower coupon. So this basically reduces the interest payments of El Salvadorian debt. And it offers, the bondholder this incentive, or rather the price appreciation of these bonds. After a 5-year period, they start selling them off. And with that profit, the bondholder gets what's called Bitcoin dividends. So, I mean, essentially, the bondholder has exposure to the price appreciation of Bitcoin. We all think that it's not going to be at $50,000 in the next 10 years. So the model is basically based on the fact that Bitcoin generally increases in a four-year cycle, 5 years just to be safe. So yeah, bondholders will have this option of making money, rather, or getting a higher yield from the price appreciation of Bitcoin. What's also interesting is that they're looking into mining this stuff. Yep.
Before we carry on that components of the bond, so it's got a five-year lockup period, right? So you put your money in, 5 years, you can't get out. And then is there a time frame on the bond thereafter? Or how does the Bitcoin dividend component work? So after 5 years, like...
So
how does that work?
Yeah, so the entire duration of the bond is 10 years. So after this five-year lock-in period where you get your 6.25 or 6.5% coupon, then you're entitled to either sell off the bond to somebody else or just hodl it and just get the Bitcoin dividends. I don't know how they will be paid out. I'm guessing yearly or biannually. But yeah, I mean, it just has this upside from the next 5 years. It's that coupon rate that you're getting plus the appreciation of the price. As they're selling it off, they just give it back to the bondholders. So, yeah.
And is it denominated? Is it denominated in Bitcoin? Do you get settled in Bitcoin, or are you getting settled in USD?
So this will be settled in. Here's the tricky part. The stuff that I've seen is it's settled in Tether, so it has a USD component in it. And that is sort of a red flag for me a bit. So it will be very interesting to how the mechanism works. Because, I mean, you know, Tether is a point of attack, especially for the US government. But I'm pretty sure Blockstream and them, you know, are making inroads in terms of offering another alternative with the whole liquid token that they're developing. So yeah, it will be very interesting. But just the fact that Tether is very involved, it kind of keeps me a bit you know, cautious but optimistic. But yeah, again, it's just another way of pariah states, man. I mean, if Venezuela and Zimbabwe are looking at this and they're like, holy shit, all I need to do is just buy Bitcoin, or just borrow money and then I buy Bitcoin. And I'll use the proceeds to pay off the bondholder while I just use a portion of this money just to, you know, get my mining operation up and going.
Yeah.
It's a win-win, man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It changes changes the capital formation structure for nation states fundamentally. You know, like this, there hasn't been an innovation like this in 200 years, you know.
100%.
You know, how nation states raise capital, the game has just been changed. And if you've got natural resources that you can produce energy with, all of a sudden you're finding yourself in a very good position. You know, El Salvador, there's a lot of serendipitous things that happened with El Salvador. One of them is the fact that they've, you know, built on, the country sits on top of like natural fault lines and it's full of volcanoes, and they've got all this geothermal energy, which is basically free power. Exactly. And they're the first country to adopt Bitcoin.
El Salvador means the savior in Spanish.
It means the savior, literally. Yeah. I mean, I'm starting to become more and more religious the older I get, man. I'm not religious at all yet. I mean, I'm more religious than I was 2 years ago. Maybe it's Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin is kind of a cult though, actually, if you want to be honest about it. Like, and like all of these things that are happening, I'm just like, this is crazy. But we do know the IMF and the World Bank and those guys have got the economic hitmen. You best believe those guys are cooking up schemes as we speak to try to bump Bukele off. That guy must not get on a plane. He gets on every Central American leader that, that America hasn't liked, just died in a plane crash. That guy must drive only. Yeah. Take a boat.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure essentially some, just
I'm pretty sure some guy in a suit has has had a chat with Bukele. To tell him to basically toe the line. If he doesn't toe the line, something bad is gonna happen to him. I think it was Manuel Noriega. The same thing happened to him.
Yep.
Was it a Colombian guy? If I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Yeah, John Perkins.
It has been really a few. Jaime Roldos. Yeah.
So he died in a plane crash. That was crazy. So,
Muammar Gaddafi.
Muammar Gaddafi, not so sure. Don't know about him, but
who's that guy from Congo? The shit happens all the time.
Mobutu.
This shit happens all the time. And, you know, by the looks of things, the IMF sent a man in a suit to go speak to Bukele, and by the looks of it, he told him to fuck off. So, hopefully Bukele's got good security.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if you read that book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It basically lists all these people. And the biggest surprise was Saddam Hussein. But, I mean, when you look at the history, he was once an American ally against the Iranians, and then, he wanted to take all the oil, basically the Bukele on the Americans. Eventually the last solution or the last sort of measure that they take is to put boots on the ground, but it's going to take a lot to convince Bitcoiners globally that nothing untoward is happening in El Salvador. So, I mean, you'll be shooting yourself in the foot if you did anything that would hint that you're trying to remove this guy. So, yeah, I mean, it's closely watched. The one thing that they have been doing and doing very well was to convince the bondholders to sell off El Salvador debt. And this is where Steve Hanke comes in, right? Just to bash the government... acting as a spokesperson for the US government. You know, that's my view. But yeah, I mean, if Bitcoin gets to $1 million, these bonds are going to be a success, and a lot of pariah states are just going to have this wonderful solution. Samson Moe and Adam Beck are just going to be happy to help.
Yeah. You know, and it gets very interesting when El Salvador adopts this. El Salvador's got some Bitcoin. That's one scenario. America's been invading Central America for a century, you know. But it's a different kettle of fish when a resource-rich, energy-rich country like with a big army like Russia adopts it. And you best believe like they've been looking at this stuff, you know. Because America can't invade Russia. Like, it's nuclear war. You can't do that, going up against toe-to-toe against the army that's, you know, going to give you a run for your money. And it's Russia. So that's a very interesting one, you know. And how does that geopolitical game theory play out? And especially with the backdrop of, because every day it goes on, every dollar that they keep printing just weakens America's position more, because they're the global reserve currency. And the more they print, the more they devalue everyone's money, the more incentive there is to cheat. To like get out of the cartel, you know, to go somewhere else. And they can't, they'll be playing whack-a-mole, you know, because it won't just be the next country that adopts it. It won't just be like one more. It'll be like, there'll be a whole slew of them, you know, because everyone's watching. And it's very hard to justify invading El Salvador and Tonga and Fiji and, you know, Kazakhstan at the same time and saying they've all got weapons of mass destruction. What are you going to say? Oh, they're all unvaccinated. Yeah. We've got to invade them. Like, yeah. I don't know, but it becomes way harder, you know. But best believe there's some assholes in the Pentagon cooking up a lie as we speak about how they're gonna do this, because there's never been a war they didn't want to send your kids to fight, you know.
Exactly. I think if Russia, and I think this is very far off, but if Russia adopts Bitcoin, and it doesn't have to adopt it in the way El Salvador did it, by just legalizing it as legal tender. I think there are just many other ways to do it. I mean, one is to replace your reserves.
Already mining it though? I think they're already mining Bitcoin though, just at a state level.
I'm not sure.
Is that a dream I had? I have to go down and go fact check on this. But,
closely held secret, yeah. Probably. They wouldn't tell anyone. Yeah. But I mean, there are just many other ways instead of, well, you could mine Bitcoin, but you could also buy it for your central bank.
Yeah.
Could price energy in Bitcoin. So you could have oil prices or oil exports coming out of Russia being priced in Bitcoin. I mean, that's a huge game changer, right? And that would literally just decimate the petrodollar system and just further take us down the line of hyper-Bitcoinization. But in my view, when Russia joins the party and tells everyone what they've been doing, because they're not going to tell us now, it will just be so obvious by then. So
it's over.
I'm expecting I'm expecting a few countries to join the bandwagon. I'm really interested in Zimbabwe. The finance minister over there has mentioned that they're looking into adopting crypto, unless I guess Bitcoin will be the first in line. I mean, they have a very similar situation with El Salvador, except they went further and they tried to de-dollarize the economy, and that just did not work. And you go to Zimbabwe now, dollars are being used again. So they don't have a currency the way El Salvador did not have a currency, and they depend on the US dollar. So if they see any whiff of things changing and the global monetary system changing, I mean, they have this first move advantage the way El Salvador did, and it could solve a lot of problems in Zimbabwe.
The issue with Zimbabwe, though, is that you're sitting with a tyrannical authoritarian government of the worst kind that now has freedom money. Now, this freedom money gives the authoritarian tyrannical government freedom, but it also gives the people freedom. So I don't know if they fully appreciate that aspect of it, because we shouldn't expect that government leaders have done the work that we've done on Bitcoin, because they haven't had the time. You know, like, you hear the best and brightest, Elon Musk comes into Bitcoin for 6 months, he thinks he knows it all, then he says some dumb shit, and then everyone on Twitter just shits all over him, calling him stupid. It'll be the same for government officials that come into it and they're like, I'm new to Bitcoin, I'm here to fix it, you know? So they think, cool, Bitcoin is great for us because we can circumvent US sanctions or whatever. But then the Bitcoin virus gets into their community and undermines their authoritarian regime. So it's Bitcoin is a Trojan horse for freedom at the end of the day. And you just hope that the Zimbabwean officials are not clever enough to realize that and then not implement Bitcoin because of that, because they're like, we'd rather live in poverty with our authoritarianism than, you know, give everyone freedom.
Yeah, I think the same thing could be said about Bukele. I mean, Bukele is not, Mr. Democracy himself. He's got a super majority and in the parliament over there, and he's done some questionable things as of late as a president over there with his huge support, right? But we all view it as a Trojan horse. You're basically giving your citizens access to a decentralized monetary network that is completely being upgraded, not by you, but by, you know, all these smart people around the world. So I think a lot of Bitcoiners are, rightfully so, are pretty hesitant about Bukele, but Bukele can't go out there and change the code. The nodes are going to do that. And all he can do is just, you know, fuck up his plans in El Salvador by just being a bit more greedy. But, you know, there's just so much that can go right as compared to the things that can go wrong. So the fact that Bitcoin is the strong network makes sense to me.
It's money for enemies, man. I really want to see time will tell, but how this plays out. I would imagine that Iran and North Korea and Venezuela are stocking up in Bitcoin already, you know. If they're not, they what the hell are they doing? if they're not? Because from what I've heard, Russia and Venezuela have been trading oil and medical supplies for Bitcoin, you know, because they got to get around US sanctions. So, yeah, man, it becomes very interesting to see how this game theory plays out. And the biggest, most established countries are going to be the losers, you know. You're going to see the likes of the US, the UK, France, the G20. They're going to be the losers because they're going to be last to adopt. And that's kind of poetic and ironic and, you know, rightly so, in my opinion. Because fuck them. They've been screwing everyone over for way too long. One of the topics I want to jump into, though, while we're here is what do you think is the logical terminus of where all of this money printing is going? Like, how do you see this ending? What are central banks thinking? You know, how can they stop this one day and return to normalcy? Or can we ever return to normalcy? Or is this just the system imploding? Central banks printing all this money, how do they think this is actually going to end? And are they able to end it? Or like, basically, the can you taper a Ponzi question?
Yeah, tough question. Maybe let's ask Max Kaiser. But to be honest, you can't. You know, the thing is, the last time we were in this situation globally, you know, the debt situation, that is, that was just after the Second World War, right? And
yeah,
their ability to control the narrative a lot better, the US, that is, was a lot stronger. There were strong institutions then, confidence in the US, you know, as a strong nation state was, you know, really powerful. You just won the Second World War and you have these huge debts that have to be paid off. So, yeah, I mean, what they did was they let inflation run high, probably in the early double digits, high single digits, while keeping bond rates low. So sort of like a situation we're in. And that way they could reduce the debt burden, but at a cost, right? Bondholders got wrecked in nominal terms. You know, if you had any holding of U.S. government debt at the time, you lost a lot of money in real terms. Nominally, you got your money back, but in real terms, you got wrecked, right? So the 1970s came and the debt burden was a lot lower. So when the inflation spike hit then, they could raise rates without causing an alarm on debt payments. You know, raising interest rates makes debt payments a lot harder to service. But now we're in the situation where they can't raise rates, because if you raise rates, the Ponzi literally goes bust, right? And literally interest rates have to be floored. And they have to make sure that inflation stays high for a very long time. This works if there's a lot of confidence in the system. But now everybody is using the term fiat, right? And everybody is now understanding what fractional reserve banking is and what it means. Everybody is opening up to the fact that in 2008, the banksters pretty much wrecked the economy and they got away with it with bailouts. You know, they got paid at the end of the day.
Yep.
So the window of American exceptionalism, I would say, has closed dramatically since 08, probably since 2000. But 08 was just this turning point, in my view, where a lot of foreign central bankers and a lot of the foreign sector, I mean, this involves investors, you know, very rich people that are outside of the US, looking for other ways to preserve their capital. So you could either just hold on, huddle onto the US debt, and literally sign your purchasing power to the US Treasury. You're just going to get wrecked, right? With inflation at around 5% and bond yields are 10.1%. So you're getting wrecked anyway. So I think we're getting to that point where questions are going to be asked about whether the US can service its debt. They obviously can. I mean, it's in their currency. They can always print. But what happens when people start pulling out of US assets, right? The stock market is at all-time highs. The bond market is literally not giving you any returns. Gold hasn't been doing anything for the past 10 years. I mean, we all know that it's fixed at this point. Yeah. And there's this thing called Bitcoin. And I feel like a lot of people that are bashing it now are going to start appreciating it as this, you know, neutral money, neutral sound money that can enable a post-dollar system, right? I mean, if you can see the graph of previous reserve currencies, they don't last longer than 100 years, right? I think it was Spain that went the furthest with 105 years. The United Kingdom did not last that long. I think it was the Netherlands before
French.
That.
Yeah.
The French.
Yep.
Yeah. So
because it's a privilege that it's a privilege that can't be maintained, because the trend is always to debase, because the incentives like always align to people to cheat. Basically, if you can print money out of nothing, you're gonna do it. And if you can defraud the whole world while doing it, obviously it's gonna be done. So if anyone expects a different outcome, they're insane. That's the nature of the system. It's pretty simple.
Exactly. Right. So people argue that the US became, the dollar became a reserve currency just after the First World War, right? So that would give us that 100-year period. But it was cemented after the Second World War with the Bretton Woods meeting, with John Maynard Keynes basically saying, do not put the US dollar as a reserve currency. You're going to have to print this money to service everybody with this currency, basically, that's going to use it. Something called the Triffin dilemma, right? So there were people that were sounding alarms. I mean, Keynes, the Keynesian himself was sounding alarms, saying this is not sustainable, right? Yeah. So I mean, we're just going to get to that point where it's going to be a shift. It's going to start early. I thought it was China in the beginning, but you know, as time goes, you realize that China's not going to take over the world. I mean, they've literally just wrecked the economy through malinvestment.
They're even more of a Ponzi. Yeah,
they're even more Ponzi,
right? Than America. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's such a huge debt bubble in China. So, I mean, who's going to take over? We are going to probably see a lot of conflict regarding this. A couple of hot wars.
I think so.
But Bitcoin literally is the only solution to all this mess of fiat money, man. And I just hope not a lot of conflicts do materialize. The biggest one is the US and China. You know, it's literally brewing at this point. I mean, we just got to a point where the Ponzi has reached its limits, and if you taper, you're just going to accelerate its demise. So here's what I think is going to happen in the next couple of months or next year or two. I mean, they're literally going to say, we're going to taper. They expanded the, or they shortened the schedule. So they're going to taper a lot faster than previously expected because of inflation. The markets are going to puke. When the markets puke, the dollar goes up, everything goes flat, everything goes down. And then we end this deflationary cycle, and they're just going to print a lot more. And this time, it's going to be QE forever. They are not going to be able to literally get out of it. And, you know, a lot of people are going to get wrecked in this process. The people that are shunning Bitcoin now are literally going to be the ones clamoring for any type of purchasing power going forward, you know? So we're in a very interesting time in the history of mankind where we're about to enter a period of instability, in my view, but there's no real victor that would literally just dictate the new rules. And we just have this new technology, which was discovered in 08, that can shepherd us into a new future that is even more prosperous, you know, and just decimates the entire Keynesian economic model, and where, you know, our labor is preserved without any form of inflation, which is theft, you know. It's exciting for me, and I guess this is why I got into Bitcoin. It was because of these huge cycles, this huge debt cycle that we're in, and we're at the end of it. And you know, Ray Dalio, the author of this cycle theory, debt cycle theory, he reckons China's going to take over, but we know that's not happening. You know, I guess he just missed that whole Bitcoin picture in it. The Bitcoiners are here. They're all talking about it like crazy people, like it's a cult. But man, it's really exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
But I've got one curveball to throw at your hypothesis here. And that is central bank digital currencies combined with social credit score, combined with movement passes / vaccine passports. If they pull this off fast enough, because they've got to move quickly. They have to move quickly because time is against them. And that's why they're trying to accelerate everything. But the mask has slipped, you know? The resistance is strong. How do you see that playing out?
I think it's very linked to what we're seeing right now. So, like you're saying, they're going to have to move really quickly. They can't wait for the 8th booster to really deploy the stuff. But I just have this view that it will just expose the plans that they have for money. And you're just creating a surveillance state. Freedoms are curtailed. And then we have this solution, this option. I mean, even as a previous lefty, you're just going to be sitting there and, you know, you're just going to want freedom. And Bitcoin is going to offer you that. So CBDCs, social credit scores, probably this vaccine story at a much later date for other people, it's just going to accelerate the adoption of Bitcoin. I think what is currently happening is people that were lied to, or people that just expected their freedoms to come back after being vaxxed, they're realizing that no, it's not happening, it's not coming. So they're starting to wake up, right? So it's just a matter of this mass awakening, which is actually very close.
Yeah,
because of the 4th booster and the 5th booster, people are just going to be like, nah, fuck this. This is a subscription model.
Yeah, I'm not in the Pfizer subscription plan.
And once you see that, and once you see that you've been lied to, and once the Bitcoiners tell you that your money is this fucked up, and they are trying to bring this...
And it's all connected.
And then there's just going to be this aha moment. And That's
once you see that, you know, once you see that the guys from BlackRock and Vanguard own all the shares and have controlling stakes in Pfizer and Moderna,
all the property in the US,
all the property, everything, and it goes all the way back to that. And, and these guys who are the cantillionaires are trying to push through this authoritarian surveillance state. And like at a certain point, even the most normie person is going to realize, oh, fuck, there's like a massive conspiracy going on here. And like,
that's too late, right? Bitcoin has like $10 million at that time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like Bitcoiners are living on their own. They've bought out Jeffrey Epstein's island and they're living on his island by then, you know? So it's the kids, you know, but they're living large out there.
Satoshi Express, right?
Bill Clinton, not allowed. He can fuck off. He's not getting on the Satoshi Express.
He can fuck off. He can fuck off right away, man. So yeah, I mean, it's just going to be a mass awakening. I kind of see it already with normies, right? Normies are like, "Fuck, okay, why am I getting another vaccine? I'm another shot, right?"
They told me I could travel if I got the vaccine. No,
exactly.
Can't
they told me I could travel.
Ski this holiday.
Oh my god, this variant. Omicron. Whatever the fuck it is, right?
Yeah.
Omicron, whatever the fuck it is, right? I mean, it's all so fucking obvious. You saw it early.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Bitcoiners are generally just anti-COVID vaccine, not anti-vax.
Yes.
Anti-COVID vaccine. Because if they can lie to you about money, what else are they lying to you about? Right?
Everything.
You
fucking
start
everything.
Questioning shit, right? You start questioning shit and, you know, you just get to this point, you're like, I just want my fucking Bitcoin. I want my gun.
Yeah.
I want my fucking Citadel, and I want some fucking cows, and I want some fucking Bitcoin chickens, you know, some low-time preference chickens.
That's it, 100%.
You know what I'm saying?
It's crazy how it changes your mindset completely to this, like, low-time preference, like, I want, And it makes you angry when you see high-time preference being pushed on everyone. You know, like, there's nothing more high-time preference than quarterly booster shots. You know, like, that's like the peak... Peak fit, you know.
As soon as these vaxxers were being deployed, I was like, "Fuck no! You guys came up with a solution 6 months in, and you were all saying you're not going to take it because Donnie deployed them." So it's just, "Oh, kitty, kitty."
Sorry, excuse me. This cat's been chasing a dice around on the floor the whole time, making a huge noise, disrupting my pod. But they were like, "Oh, Donnie developed these things, Operation Warp Speed. I'll never take it." And then as Joe's in office, they're like, "Give me four of those fucking things.
Give me. Put it in my veins." So it was all politicized from the beginning. So I was like, "Fuck this. I'm not taking this." And I think Bitcoin was that whole thing for me that it's not a drill. This thing is coming. They're going to deploy these central bank digital currencies. And it seems like China is a very good model for this.
Absolutely. And you know, so this is exactly it, right? Like the authoritarians and the tyrants, the fascists, whatever, I just call it evil, essentially. They didn't go away after the fall of the Berlin Wall. They didn't go away after the fall of the Soviet Union and the Nazi state in Germany, because evil never goes away. It just goes into remission, you know? Like, it's like yin and yang. Everyone has got good and evil in them. And, like, you can, if you create this purely good society, evil's always going to come back because it's human nature, right? But, like, the authoritarians have looked at this Chinese model and be like, okay, this is how we can... Because they're parasites, right? This is how we can parasitize the largest amount of productive people. It's not through this pure communist system like we had in the Soviet Union, because that's really unproductive. Or like North Korea, because that's like hyper unproductive. And if we can parasitize the remnant, like the most productive people, and Alex Fetsky had this great article in Bitcoin Magazine this week about this. Like the parasite class is just trying to leech off the productive class as much as possible. So if you can create a system where you've got public-private partnerships, you know, state capitalism, whatever they fucking call it, fascism, essentially, right? Big government and big business coming together. It's fascism. If you can create that, that's the most efficient way to parasitize your host. And that's exactly what you have in the US. You have every single country on earth right now. And they all have the hegemony on money creation, because they all central banks run off the same system, which is like money prints a good brr. And, you know, we'll rob everyone because we have the ability to create money. They'll keep doing that as much as they can. Eventually, the system collapses under its own weight. But the Chinese system is the one that they look at and they're like, ah, this is cool. We can have this like techno-fascism, where we can control people's lives completely, social credit score, exclude them from society. This, it's basically divide and conquer is what the social credit score is. So these guys are looking at it. The what Laser Huddle calls the Malthusians are looking at this, and they like, this is the wet dream for them, you know? But what they didn't factor in was Bitcoin. And they didn't factor in that Bitcoin was going to be the escape valve or the pressure release valve to their to their system. So now their timeline has been moved faster, and they've got to implement all these things really quickly. And their science, their tech, they deployed is pretty shit. Their vaccine, not good. Doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
You know? Doesn't work. Doesn't work so well. Yet
makes you wonder what the CBDC is going to be like, right? Look at the digital yuan and its deployments. They all
the CBDC is going to be worse than fucking Solana.
Exactly, they had to ban Bitcoin because nobody gave a shit about the digital yuan, right? So, I mean, if they move fast, they're going to make mistakes.
Totally, they're gonna. You see, and this is the thing. They're going to take the Silicon Valley approach to
money.
You know.
Did you see what
doesn't work well with money?
Did you see what David Solomon said? I think this morning or yesterday, the Goldman Sachs guy, he said, "Blockchain, not Bitcoin." I mean, this fucker.
He said that in 2021.
In 2021, right? I mean, if you're gonna have centralized garbage, might as well just run a spreadsheet, right? I mean, what's the point of blockchain? There's no point.
Let me point out how toxic blockchains are. Cardano announced their partnership with Ethiopia. A month later, Ethiopia's in civil war. Oh, that shit's toxic.
You know
fuck
what?
Fuck around, you find out. Really, you play really stupid games. This.
We need to change the word blockchain and just use timestamps, man. Fuck this. Because all these scammers are just using this. And, you know, they're ripping off a lot of people, right?
Yep.
Cardano is just one crazy culty coin that is just, you know, just looking at Africa as like this place where blockchain is going to be used for a lot of things like education and...
right. If it's coming to Africa, then they might change their opinion on that. You need electricity to run a blockchain, guys. You need reliable power. You also need a compliant population. And that is one thing we have in Africa, is a non-compliant population.
Look at our look at our vaccination rates. I mean, I'm proud of South Africa.
30%. Yeah, so am I, man.
I guess South Africa was early in the whole process of things getting fucked and wrecked, where people just don't trust the government anymore. I mean, the ANC has been a total mess. I mean, if you just go around in townships, garbage collection is a problem. You know what I'm saying? So people are like, oh, you can lock us down, get us into hunger and poverty, but you can give us vaccines. I mean, who the fuck?
And how you care about our health?
And how do you care about our health?
You care about health. Fuck off.
So I guess South Africa was lucky in that regard, where I don't want to say lucky, but like just the state just got so wrecked when you compare to Europe, where people are very compliant, or Australia, where people are very compliant and, you know, they do as they're told. Whereas in South, you know, we got the brunt of the worst form of governance. And I just want to find a way to change the narrative in South Africa, but the shit coins are a distraction. just to put it in the form of money. Just put it out there and say, how do you think the rand is created? I mean, do you think the money that you have in your bank is there? Is it not loaned out by another bank or by your bank? Is your money really there? You know? And where Bitcoin fits into this. So if we have Cardano, Solana, and all of this mess, I guess it's a stage. It's just going to take a little bit longer. But definitely. South Africa. Yep.
Yeah, you know, so we were talking earlier about this Bitcoin Adoption Africa project that's been kickstarted now. And the aim of this project, well, I might be speaking out of turn here. Andre might be upset to me about this, but what we're talking about is getting a grassroots movement of Bitcoin meetups going all around the country. So in every town, we want to have a monthly Bitcoin meetup. So we want to inspire, like, it starts small, right? So we had one in Cape Town a few weeks back. Then, you know, we move that to monthly. We get one going in Joburg. We get one going in Durban. Get one going in George and Bloom, like all over the country, you know. Get these things going. And then you take the Uncle Jim model, you know, like where you've got a couple of dedicated Bitcoiners who just show up, educate. And Bitcoin is contagious, man. Bitcoin's the mind virus. Because look at us. Here's two of us, you know, speaking passionately about a subject for an hour. Exactly. Just because we fucking love Bitcoin so much, you know? Because we see hope. Like, we see hope and change Bitcoin. And, like, you know, all the things Obama said was going to happen. You know, like, here we are talking about it. And that same fire can be replicated at the grassroots level to everyone.
Exactly.
You know? And it doesn't, you don't need 100% of people. You need 5%.
No.
You need that small, intolerant minority to adopt it. And then it's a game changer, man. So I think that the way to do this is to just get out there and just spread the word, because it'll take off. And what Kotsatsu at Exonumia is doing is so valuable, is translating Bitcoin amazing, into native African languages.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Because if you can read the Bitcoin standard in Xhosa or Zulu, in your home language, you know, you read this and you're like, oh shit, the penny drops a lot faster than if you read it in English, exactly. Third language.
Yeah.
Or Afrikaans for that matter, you know?
Yeah.
Like we just need to translate into as many languages as possible, get the word out there, and the rest will take care of itself like it has for us, you know? Bitcoin is an inspirational thing and it's got zero marketing budget. Doesn't need Cardano's marketing budget.
It speaks for itself. I guess one of the... Look, I'm not one of those people that think that impoverished people with, you know, really low educational levels are not going to understand this, right? I mean, El Salvador is a perfect example of how something that is literally, you know, it's on your smartphone. You can see the money whiz through in and out of your smartphone. A lot of people can grasp this concept pretty fast. I guess the other barrier would be, why Bitcoin? Why not Ethereum? You know, and I mean, now the orange pilling will have to happen in a mass scale, which has already been happening, but this time in mass scale. But it's definitely coming. I mean, it's one of those things that will absolutely happen, especially when the rand is tanking like this.
Yeah. It's just going to be a repetition of what's been happening already, just as a exponential growth. We're at the bottom of the adoption curve still, you know?
Yeah.
It's already happening. It just needs to carry on. And all we need to do is just, you know, make sure that, you know, we keep talking to people and keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah. What's pretty disheartening is that, you know, I want the poor people in South Africa. We've got a lot of poor people here, right?
Yeah.
The poor people in South Africa to basically get ahead of the adoption curve. So I guess these grassroots organizations can help in that regard. But yeah, I mean, just to get the word out there before everybody else gets it. I mean, that would be amazing for this country, right? And it would just change everything if we just get to that point where the rand is now no longer regarded as a store of value, and people just, you know, just hodl sats on their smartphones and a custodial wallet just to start off with. And then you're going to have to rearrange people about taking your stuff off an exchange and all of that. So we literally have to replicate what we went through just for the masses, and it's just going to take a longer time. So,
you know, the one thing we've got going for us, though, and this is what's come clear for me over the last 2 years. So I come from, you know, the academia, did postgrad stuff, and my faith in educated people has never been lower than ever before.
Oh, yeah.
to uneducate or to unindoctrinate educated people is borderline impossible. But you can go to an uneducated person and show him Bitcoin and be like, look, it works. And look, number go up. And he's like, cool, what do I do? You know? Whereas if I have to go and speak to some PhD economist, I had dinner with a behavioral economist the other night. And she was just coming up with all these reasons to why it won't work. And I was like, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's sitting at $50,000. Like, you know, it's been on for 13 years. What more do you want to see?
Yeah, I mean,
she's like, no, central banks won't let it happen. I'm like, okay, cool.
Have fun. Yeah. You didn't tell her that, right?
I did.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of problems with my normie friends and my normie circle. You know, when I try and orange pill them, because it's the same things. It's like, no, you're crazy. It's a conspiracy. They think you're crazy and it's a conspiracy. Mm. And, you know, when you just tell them about the basics, man, fractional reserve banking, and they're like, no, there must be a reason for this. And, you know, it's to
the institutions wouldn't screw us over like this. They have our best interest at heart.
Exactly. It's like, you're like, dude, the money you think is in your bank is not in the bank. That's where you start, right? If you get someone to understand what fractional reserve banking is, I feel like you're getting somewhere to teach them about money. You know what I'm saying? And at least, you know, the history of money as well, where, you know, we started with seashells all the way to cattle, probably in other places in Africa, to, you know, precious metals being used as money and the reasons behind this. And, you know, from 1971, I think the very essence of Bitcoin is at least the experiment that started in 1971, where gold was completely dislocated from, you know, the vouchers that would prove that you have this much gold. So, which we call the money now, and we are in this experiment. It's 50 years old, roughly, and it's about to crash. And, you know, a lot of people that are pretty much educated, I think if you just have a bachelor's degree, you're just in a disadvantage right now in this current environment where you just trust the system so much that you're just so blinded by, you know, what is happening. And it is a lot easier, like what Khotatu is doing with Exoku Media. That's amazing, man. Where and Frokeno, man. Frokeno is doing amazing stuff.
Frey Frokeno.
Frey Frokeno.
Yeah. Really, he's doing amazing work. Like what they're doing stuff, in Mossel Bay. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's sort of like a Bitcoin beach thing, and it's gaining traction, right? I see his tweets all the time. I mean, these are the type of things that we need to do in the interim until, you know, the masses come in and there's just this massive audience all of a sudden. And By the Horns is up there with ENCA viewership. I'll be flipping happy now.
Bro, we're beating ENCA viewership already. No one pays attention to that bullshit.
Yes. Yeah, no,
those guys are. The only people watching ENCA are the reporters' mothers, bro, just to support them, you know? Like, no one watches that guy.
No, straight up. It's, it's crazy, right?
I mean, it's... So... On that point, like, the corporate... Michael Malice says this all the time, but the corporate press is the enemy of the people, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I was standing in the shop on Sunday, and I looked at the newsstand next to me, and all the newspapers are there. And it was like five newspapers, like the Sunday Times, the Burger Report, Cape Argus, Mail Guardian. Every single one on the headline was justifying authoritarianism. The one was like, interprovincial travel is irresponsible. And the other one was debate about mandatory vaccines is now the time. And it was like framing it in like a positive light. So they're priming people. So they're just simping for authoritarianism. The newspapers are literally trying to shape the narrative that authoritarianism is what we need in our society. Like, no society ever needs authoritarianism. Just like no person ever needs leukemia, no society fucking needs authoritarianism, you know? Mm. And these guys are literally the enemy of the people. And people need to people need to treat them the same way we treat a tobacco executive, you know?
Exactly, that
These guys are selling us shit to try to kill us, you know? So when I see News 24 publish their bullshit, I'm just like, you motherfuckers are literally
To be fair, Ricky, I mean, doctors used to promote tobacco, right? Why can't they promote something that's toxic for you? Or at least you just don't need it. And what if this is just some bad flu, man? And here's the weird thing about restrictions. So these restrictions are coming in. These people are realizing, holy shit, I've got this power in my hands, and I can just implement sort of long-lasting measures, right?
Yep.
When you look at 9/11, the aftermath of
Patriot 9/11,
the Patriot Act, I mean, that created AML and, you know, KYC was, you know, a lot more stringent, right? So what people are not realizing is there's no turning back. You're going to have to fight harder just to do the shit that you were doing normally before 2020. That's where the problem lies. Power is so intoxicating.
It changes your physiology.
Exactly.
Your physiology.
Literally, right? Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma at some point was depriving us of buying hot food, man. Remember?
Yeah. She deprived the entire country of garage pies. That is our national fucking dish. How dare she?
Crazy, crazy stuff, right? So, I mean, a lot of normies are waking up to this. They're like, man, things are supposed to be normal by now. And things are not normal. So, what if we've been lied to? And, you know, when you realize that, and then you just ask yourself, what else are they lying to you about? And then it's just like a skating effect, man. It's crazy. And it's bullish for Bitcoin.
It's very bullish for Bitcoin. But, you know, I look at this whole thing as probabilities, right? So I'm like, what is the probability that the virus escaped from a biological weapons research lab in Wuhan? Because that's what the Wuhan Institute of Virology is, right? They're developing gain of function. They're doing bioweapons. So they tell us it escaped from the wet market across the road. Okay. So what is the chance that this engineered, what looks a hell of a lot like an engineered virus, escaped from a bioengineering lab where they're engineering weapons, or did it escape from this wet market? Okay, cool. So let's give it 50-50 probability, okay? So then this thing escapes, and now the same people who were doing the research on it, like Fauci and the NIH and all, his whole gang of guys who were doing the gain-of-function research, are now the ones who are saying, you need to take this vaccine. Okay, now, fine, go and take the vaccine, do your thing, but just assign a probability to the fact that maybe there's malevolent actors behind. And if those same malevolent actors are now the ones telling you to take this medication, if you follow it all the way through, let's say there's a 2% chance this whole thing is malevolent. Now, would you still take this? Would you still act the same knowing that? Like,
no.
Would you still take the chance? No, you wouldn't, you know?
You wouldn't.
Because people are like, oh, there's no chance. Let me tell you something. There's nothing is zero in this life. Like, there's always a probability.
It's up to you
to what that probability is. But is that probability 1%, 2%, 5%, 10%? Is it 80%? Fucking you decide.
I think as long as it's non-zero, it becomes a probability that should be, you know, watched at least. Exactly.
And then you know that there are existing drugs that work extremely well to treat this with, and that COVID, the infection fatality rate is like below 0.5%. It's like, you know, 0.001%. Like, it's tiny. So you could treat that with conventional drugs that have a long history. We know what their side effect profile is. We know all of those things. We also know that the side effect profile of the vaccine is super high. You know, more people have had adverse events than all vaccines combined for the last 30 years have occurred just from the COVID vaccines. So take that information, do with it what you will, and then think maybe there's some malevolence at play here. So then, you know, why not just take existing drugs to treat this? Think rationally, you know, and don't go down the authoritarian hole, because how is that going to help anything? Like, how is complying going to help, you know? And in case people need a bit of a refresher, they've been complying for 2 years. Have you got your freedom back? Can you travel?
No.
Your third boost? Buy Bitcoin. Fuck. Guns.
What's funny about South Africa is when you get your shot now, I mean, all the big corporates are now mandating vaccinations and everything. Yeah, so when you get your shot now, you are getting a vaccine for the first wave, the Wuhan wave.
Alpha.
Alpha. So no Delta protection. I mean, just let's say that, you know, the vaccines work. I mean, in your right mind, are you going to take a vaccine? I mean, I suppose people that have not taken it up until this point have made up their mind, but they're just going to be forced now, right? But what we're being fed now is vaccines that are just outdated now, right?
Yeah. By they're just far, carrying their old stuff now. They're just selling you that stuff that's past the sell by date. Best before Omicron variants.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable. It's madness. The thing is, people are going to wake up. People are going to wake up. It looks like in South Africa, a lot of people are already just there. And, you know, thanks to the ANC, man, viva.
Viva. Fucking, you're right there, bro. Viva ANC, because they red-pilled more people than anyone else could, you know?
If the ANC actually did its work, right, people are going to trust these vaccines. But no ways, man. Yeah.
Exactly. And the ANC also red-pilled us to the fact that opposition parties are full of shit as well. Like, the DA, if the DA was in chance, we'd be Australia right now. You know, they would be tripping over to lock you down and put you in an internment camp because you got a spicy cough. Like, they can fuck right off as well. It's, you know, how many parties came out and were like, no to vaccine mandates. This is against, you know, our constitutional rights and our rights as human beings. Like, I'm not a slave. You don't have control of my body. You don't get to put stuff in me. Why? Kenneth Michaud from the ACDP. Like, not religious. I will vote for them just because of that.
He's a man
of principle.
Definitely. Did you see AfriForum as well with a lot of support from the black population? That's how deep this thing is, right? It's crazy, man. Yeah. It is unbelievable. It might probably unite this country further.
Big time. Yeah, big time. So I actually know a couple of the guys in AfriForum, you know, just colloquially, I know them, and they are deeply principled people. And that is why they're approaching this from a first principle position. Like, you see, Piet Leroux came out now, Sakalicha made a statement. They against vaccine mandates. And they're against vaccine mandates on principle. Not because, the vaccine doesn't work or like you can still spread it, any of that. They're like, no. The government does not get to tell me what I can put in my body because we live in a free society. And we are anti-slavery, because if someone else can control your body, that makes you a slave. Exactly. And therefore, we are anti-slavery and we don't support it. Done. You know, that's it. You can say what the fuck you want thereafter about efficacy and, you know, like, oh, but you might get sick. Fuck off. That doesn't matter. Like, I'd rather, you know, live free than die on my knees. And so you've got Sakalicha, which is part of the broader solidarity movement. They're only one of 24 organs underneath Solidarity. So their whole Solidarity chain is following this narrative now. And they're like, they pro human rights and pro choice. And that unites across cultural divides. It's not an Afrikaans thing.
It's not an Afrikaans thing anymore, right? It's a freedom thing. It's unbelievable.
And AfriForum always says, or Aaron Roots always says, is like, if you think, when people say to them, do you guys want to be, why aren't you a political party? Why can't we vote for you? They're like, if you think that we are want to be a political party, you're underestimating our ambitions. They're a cultural movement that is trying to push for self-determination, freedom, classical liberal principles, and basically the right people to be left the fuck alone. And politicians can't get that done because politicians have a different set of incentives that act on them.
The right people to be orange pulled, eh?
Absolutely, man. We're working on it. We're working on it hard. I believe that there's two groups of people in this country that I think are Bitcoiners. They just don't know it yet. And that is the majority of black people and the majority of Afrikaans people. Because both of those groups are inherently conservative, right?
Conservative, exactly.
Inherently conservative. You know, they want to be left alone. Yeah. They want to run their own affairs. They don't want these fucking, you know, English liberals up in their business all the time. And I say that with shame because, you know, that's my stock. But yeah, you know, my English liberals need to get their act together.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't say that. But
anyway. Yeah, we digress. Yeah, someone's got it because they're fielding a weak team at the moment, bro. Anyway, Hodl, I think we're going to leave it there. We've been spicy enough. We're probably going to be banned after this video. But anyway, is what it is. if people want to follow you, where can they find you? Where can they find your work, your commentaries and things?
You know, right now, just on Twitter, at of Hodl. That's literally my handle. And
in the description.
Yeah, there's a lot of anti-vax stuff in there, anti-shitcoin shit in there, pro-Bitcoin. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Sounds like there's a lot of pro-freedom stuff in there.
Pro-freedom, anti-flipping experimental jabs for sure.
Amen. Yeah.
Probably conservative in some instances. You know, I just, you know, probably talk about how climate change is one of these narratives that are shaped by
the lizards in academia.
Scientists. Trust the science, man, even if it's just horrible, right?
It pisses me off so much as a scientist myself, man. Like, to see people think science is an institution. Science is a way of thinking. Science is a process. Which means it is shaped by disagreements and debate, and it's shaped literally by people disagreeing and shouting at each other.
Exactly.
It is not Fauci standing up there saying, "Oh, I am the science." That's not at all not, what it not, is. Not, Emperor Palpatine.
Not 702 speak. Is it peer reviewed? Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys are paid shills. They don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. Anyway, we're getting really spicy.
Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, this one's
my pleasure. My pleasure. We're going to meet up in person soon, I'm sure, at our next Bitcoin meetup. I'm not going to dox where you are, but we'll figure it out. And thank you so much, bro. We'll chat soon.
Cheers, my man.